On radio, online and mobile. You're with SBS Radio.
This is SBS World News Radio. I'm Greg Dyatt.
And I'm Michael Tomalaris. Coming up tonight,
we've got people who've been languishing in offshore hellholes for 4 years. Bring them to Australia, allow them to make the contribution we know they so desperately want to make, and the country will be better because of it.
The Greens renew their calls for an end to offshore processing as a small number of refugees are resettled in the United States.
Also this evening, a Serb paramilitary commander plans to appeal against a 15-year sentence for war crimes committed in the early 1990s.
I think the amount of war crime activity in this case is far less than in some cases, where crimes were much harsher and courts gave less than 10 years in sentence.
And New Zealand wedding vendors cashing in on same-sex couples from Australia.
All those stories and more coming up in the next 30 minutes.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock with the news. I'm Mike Tomalaris. Gas companies have agreed to supply enough gas to meet the needs of the domestic market next year. The commitment from gas executives means the government won't have to follow through on its threat to restrict exports. It comes after the release of reports showing the shortfall of gas in 2018 could go as high as 108 petajoules, about three times larger than previously forecast. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull says the energy needs of the Australian public must come first.
We've made it very clear that we're prepared to exercise those powers in circumstances where there is going to be a shortfall of gas. But our objective is to ensure there is not a shortfall of gas. That's the whole objective. Now, we've been given the undertakings today and we've got further work to do. We want to see this incorporated into an agreement. It's very important to provide the maximum assurance for Australian families and businesses and jobs with the supply of gas.
Former Green Senator Larissa Waters says she's not sure of the government's chances in a High Court case regarding the citizenship status of herself and several other politicians. Ms. Waters is one of seven federal MPs whose citizenship was in doubt at the time they were nominated during last year's federal election. The federal government has filed a submission to the court saying One Nation Senator Malcolm Roberts and former Green Senator Scott Ludlam were wrongly elected last year and should be disqualified from Parliament. But, it says, Deputy Prime Minister Barnaby Joyce, National Senators Matt Canavan and Fiona Nash, Larissa Waters and Crossbench Senator Nick Xenophon are not disqualified. Ms. Waters, who resigned once she discovered she held dual citizenship, says despite her misgivings, she hopes the court does side with the Commonwealth.
The government's really trying to argue against everybody's common understanding of the Constitution, and I think they've probably got Buckley's chance of succeeding. And of course, they're only arguing that because they want to save their own. They're not doing it out of the generosity of spirit to me or to Senator Xenophon. But we'll all wait and see what the court says. I've renounced my Canadian citizenship and I'm really excited and looking forward very much to the prospect of returning to my old job as the Senator for Queensland.
Federal opposition leader Bill Shorten has called for national and international support in implementing sanctions on North Korea. It comes after US President Donald Trump said the United States is totally prepared to pursue a military option to handle the North Korean nuclear crisis. Speaking in Tokyo, Mr. Shorten says the international community needs to keep up the pressure on the secretive regime. He says the North Korean crisis transcends politics.
It is why it is so important that when both sides of Australian politics talk to the Australian people about the need to support sanctions and encouraging, amongst other nations, China and Russia, to enforce sanctions, we don't do it because it's an idle argument somewhere else in the world. The conflict and the risk to conflict is serious and it's real, and we need to do everything we can diplomatically to make sure that the United Nations Security Council resolutions have their effect.
A Croatian court has sentenced an Australian citizen to 15 years in prison for war crimes committed in the 1990s. Dragan Vasiljevic, also known as Captain Dragan, and Daniel Sneden has been found guilty of the killings and torture of imprisoned Croatian civilians and troops while he was a rebel Serb commander during the 1991 to 1995 Croatian War. The 62-year-old moved to Australia at 15 and later returning to the Balkans to take part in the Belgrade-backed uprising of Serbs in Croatia. The dual Serbian-Australian citizen was arrested in Perth in 2006 and extradited to Croatia in July 2015 after a prolonged legal battle. Professor Gideon Boas, a former senior legal officer at the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia, says hundreds or even thousands of war criminals could be hiding in Australia. But he says local authorities have neither the resources nor the motivation to pursue against or action against them.
It would be better, in my view, had we prosecuted Veselković ourselves. That would have set a standard in Australia. It would have set a message that we are committed to investigating and prosecuting war criminals who are under our nose, including Australian citizens, and unfortunately we missed that opportunity.
King Salman of Saudi Arabia has issued an order allowing women to drive for the first time. The order will come into force next June. Women in Saudi Arabia have campaigned for many years for the right to have driver's licenses. Until now, Saudi Arabia has been the only country in the world that does not permit women to drive. And a look at tomorrow's weather. Perth, showers and storms, likely 18 degrees. In Adelaide, showers 17. Melbourne, rain 17. In Hobart, similar conditions, 15 degrees. In Sydney, partly cloudy, a top of 26. Canberra, early rain, mostly sunny, 21. And Brisbane, hot and sunny, a top of 35 degrees. Greg, more on these stories coming up on SBS World News at 6:30.
Thanks, Michael. Right across Australia, you're listening to SBS World News Radio, 7 past 6. A four-year wait is over for the first of the refugees leaving Papua New Guinea's Manus Island and Nauru. A small group is on its way to the United States as part of the one-off deal struck between the US President Barack Obama and Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull late last year. Matt Kinnellan has our report.
The first group of asylum seekers leaving Australia's offshore detention centres has headed out of Papua New Guinea, destined for the United States. The Refugee Action Coalition says the group includes Sudanese, Afghan, Rohingya and Iranian refugees. The former detainees left Port Moresby, headed for the Philippines, where they would transfer to a flight to the United States. Foreign Minister Julie Bishop says she is happy to see the resettlement begin.
I'm very pleased that the first group are being resettled in the United States, and the United States is continuing to uphold its side of the agreement. Obviously, it's up to the United States to vet and agree to take certain numbers of refugees, so we'll wait to see how it turns out, but I'm pleased that the agreement is being implemented.
Under the one-off deal struck between former US President Barack Obama and Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull, up to 1,250 asylum seekers will be resettled in the United States. That is, after they have been screened. The president of the US Refugee Settlement Organization, HIAS, Mark Hetfield, has told the ABC how the resettlement process will work.
We receive the refugees at the airport. We find them safe housing to live in. We stock that housing with food and furniture. We get their kids in school. We do our best to make sure the parents speak a functional level of English. We get them. We try to get them employment as quickly as possible. That's the major basis by which we are judged. And we make sure they get any mental health or health services that they need.
The deal has faced considerable opposition. Indeed, it was in danger of unravelling after Donald Trump succeeded Mr. Obama as US president in January. In February, only a month after Mr. Turnbull pressured him to uphold the deal during a phone call, Mr. Trump described it as dumb. A leaked transcript of the call showed Mr. Turnbull told him he could decide whether or not to accept them after vetting. The Prime Minister said in the call, "You can decide to take 1,000 or 100. It's entirely up to you." Greens leader Richard Di Natale has told Sky News that Australia needs to be letting the asylum seekers into Australia.
What we need to do is show a bit of decency, compassion, humanity here. We've got people who've been languishing in offshore hellholes for 4 years. Bring them to Australia, allow them to make the contribution we know they so desperately want to make, and the country will be better because of it.
More than 1,600 refugees have expressed interest in US resettlement. It means some will miss out. Ms. Bishop says there are other options, although none includes resettlement in Australia.
There are obviously other alternatives. They can stay in Papua New Guinea or in Nauru. They can seek to be resettled in a third country. They will not be resettled in Australia. So there are other countries that take refugees. There are also people who have been found not to be owed protection. They are not refugees and they should return to their homes.
Another 27 people are due to leave for the United States later this week, but 2,000 refugees have been left behind on Manus Island and Nauru. The Melbourne-based Human Rights Law Centre says more than 1,700 of those have had their cases assessed and are deemed refugees. It says 169 of them are children. 3 years ago, Australia allocated $55 million to a Cambodia resettlement deal, but only seven people accepted that offer, largely seen as a failure. Most refugees offered that deal decided instead to return to their home countries.
Matt Kinnellan with that report. Now, a little later in the show, we'll tell you about Saudi Arabia lifting its ban on women getting behind the wheel.
My son called me and he said, "Congratulations, Mum." I said, "What's wrong?" He said, "They allowed you to drive." I said, "You're kidding."
That's still to come on SBS World News Radio. It's 13 past six. A former Serbian paramilitary commander extradited to Croatia from Australia has been sentenced to 15 years behind bars for war crimes committed in the 1990s. The court found Dragan Vasiljevic guilty of killing and torturing soldiers and civilians during Croatia's independence war from 1991 to 1995. The decision makes him the first Australian citizen to be convicted of war crimes. This report from Natasia Kalios.
Dragan Vasiljevic was a rebel Serb commander during the 1990s Balkan War. Also known as Captain Dragan, the 62-year-old has been found guilty of the killings and torture of captive Croatian civilians and soldiers. Vasiljevic moved to Australia at the age of 15, before returning to the Balkans in 1991 to train a Serbian rebel group opposed to Croatia breaking away from Yugoslavia. He returned to Australia, where he worked as a golf instructor under the name Daniel Sneden, but returned to Croatia in 2015 after losing a decade-long battle to block extradition. A panel of judges has found Vasiljevic guilty of two charges, which include beating and torturing imprisoned Croatian police and army troops and commanding a special forces unit involved in the destruction of Croatian villages. The court has also found he was responsible for the deaths of at least two civilians. In handing down the sentence, the chief judge had this to say.
They were beating prisoners with their guns. They were brandishing their guns in front of them, pushing the barrels into their mouths. They were taking them out to be executed, tying them up, psychologically abusing them. They tortured them, deprived them of water. And he was told about all of this by prisoners. He saw all of this for himself. He saw the wounds on the prisoners. Prisoners were unable to move because of their wounds. He didn't do anything to prevent this and punish the perpetrators.
The trial took 1 year and involved 60 prosecution witnesses, including some who said they were tortured by Vasiljevic himself. He was arrested in Australia in 2006, the first Australian accused war criminal to be extradited to face a trial overseas. Ivan Turudic from the Association of Croatian Prisoners of War spoke in front of the court.
He got less than a year for each killed Croatian prisoner. Then I have to ask you, how much is one life of a prisoner worth?
Vasiljevic maintains his innocence. Defence lawyer Tomislav Filaković says his client will lodge an appeal.
There is no substance for such a drastic verdict here in this case. I think the amount of war crime activity in this case is far less than in some cases, where crimes were much harsher and courts gave less than 10 years in sentence.
La Trobe University law professor Gideon Boas has previously worked as a senior legal officer at the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia. Professor Bowers says Australia had the option to prosecute Vasiljkovic here, but spent millions supporting an extradition process.
I think the message from Croatia is we're committed to prosecuting war crimes that have occurred in our jurisdiction, and that's just and right. The message for Australia is we missed an opportunity and spent an enormous amount of money on obtaining the extradition of a person who's also an Australian citizen who we could have prosecuted. If there's a takeout from this, it is, I hope, that it generates some interest again in Australia for investigating and prosecuting war crimes for people who have committed those crimes elsewhere but are residing here.
Vasiljkovic has been in custody for 2 years and has already served 9 years behind bars in Australia.
Natasha Kelios with that report. Coming up on the show, wedding vendors across the Tasman making the most of Australia's current ban on same-sex marriages.
Are you concerned at all that Australia might legalise same-sex marriage over there and then you lose that kind of destination wedding aspect here?
I've never been one to worry about things I can't change. If it happens, it happens. Even though for me, myself, I'd lose the market. I think it'll be good for Australians, same-sex people. For them, they can get married there with their friends in their country.
That story coming up. But now US President Donald Trump has once again hit back at North Korea. The president was speaking at a news conference after meeting the Spanish Prime Minister. And as usual, the topic of North Korea sprang readily to the president's lips. Here's Matt Kinnellan.
The war of words between the United States and North Korea shows little sign of abating. Yesterday, North Korea's Foreign Minister Ri Hong-yo accused US President Donald Trump of declaring war on the rogue nation. Today, Mr. Trump says the US is prepared if it comes to that.
We are totally prepared for the second option, not a preferred option. But if we take that option, it will be devastating, I can tell you that, devastating for North Korea. That's called the military option. If we have to take it, we will.
The escalation in rhetoric between the two nations continues apace, with neither side willing to back down. Mr. Trump blames the North Korean regime for the escalation. He says the US is merely responding to North Korea's provocation and that he inherited the situation.
He's acting very badly. He's saying things that should never, ever be said. And we're replying to those things, but it's a reply. It's not an original statement, it's a reply. But the things that he said over the last year, and if you look back, the things that he said to past administrations, North Korea is a situation that should have been handled 25 years ago, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, and 5 years ago, and it could have been handled much more easily. You had various administrations, many administrations, which left me a mess. But I'll fix the mess.
There's a lot for the president to do at the moment. Protests by NFL players, many of whom have knelt during the national anthem, have dominated the headlines. Mr. Trump has been accused of being distracted by the saga, a claim he denies, despite again denouncing the symbolic gesture, as he's done every day for 5 days.
Well, I wasn't preoccupied with the NFL. I was ashamed of what was taking place because, to me, that was a very important moment. I don't think you can disrespect our country, our flag, our national anthem. To me, the NFL situation is a very important situation. I've heard that before about was I preoccupied. Not at all. Not at all.
It's been suggested that Mr. Trump has been sufficiently distracted by it that aid has been too slow to reach Puerto Rico. The U.S. territory was devastated by Hurricane Maria. Mr. Trump's critics and some of Puerto Rico's 3.4 million residents have accused the U.S. government of being slow to respond with water, food and electricity grid repairs on the mainland. The president has since decided to increase funding to assist with debris removal and emergency protective measures. He says the U.S. has been told it's doing an amazing job.
Everybody has said it's amazing the job that we've done in Puerto Rico. We're very proud of it. And I'm going there on Tuesday. Now, with all of that being said, if you look at the amount of water dropped on that island between the two hurricanes, and the first they just barely got by with, but they were devastated. And the second was a complete wipeout. I mean, this was a place that was destroyed. So I think we've done a really good job.
Donald Trump ending that report by Matt Kinnellan. Saudi Arabia is to allow women to drive from next June. The ban on women driving has been widely seen as a symbol of repression of women in the ultra-conservative kingdom, which is the last country in the world to permit women behind the wheel. Here's Andrea Nierhoff.
Saudi Arabia has been widely criticised for being the only country in the world that bans women from driving, despite ambitious government targets to increase their public role, especially in the workforce. But at the United Nations, Saudi Arabia's permanent representative made this unexpected announcement.
You may be interested to know that a few minutes ago, a royal decree has been issued in Saudi Arabia giving women the right to drive. This is a historic day for Saudi society, for men and women, and we can now say at last.
Saudi state television too made the official announcement in the capital, Riyadh.
We refer to the negative consequences of not allowing women to drive and the positive impact of allowing it, taking into consideration the application of and compliance with Sharia regulations. We also refer to the views of the majority of members of the Council of Senior Scholars who deemed women's driving permissible according to Islamic ruling.
Sahar Nassif is in Jeddah and has campaigned actively to allow women to drive and has spoken to the BBC.
It was a great surprise. My son called me and he said, congratulations, Mom. I said, what's wrong? He said, they allowed you to drive. I said, you're kidding. And I had to put the Saudi channel on to make sure it's true. And then I hang up and I was singing and my mom called and she said, you heard about it? I said, yes. And I said, you see, Mom? He said, don't dream. Well, we dream and we get what we dream.
But while the move has been welcomed, women in the kingdom still face other restrictions. They're bound by law to wear long robes and a headscarf and require the consent of a male guardian for most legal actions. The decision to allow them to drive is being seen as part of Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's reform drive, aimed at adapting to a post-oil era. The program, called Vision 2030, aims to modernize Saudi Arabia and bring it in line with the rest of the world, for example, with the modest introduction of entertainment. Some also see it as the kingdom's attempt to rebrand its reputation and mitigate its harsh human rights record.
And that report was compiled by Maya Jameson. Now, while Australia ponders whether to legalise same-sex marriage, legislation across the Tasman in New Zealand has meant good money for many businesses. Nearly 1,000 Australian couples have been married in New Zealand since the laws changed 4 years ago, and more than a quarter of the same-sex marriages are in the country. And some of those who opposed the idea at the time say they've changed their minds. Nastasia Tay has the story.
Brittany Black and Sarah Bonner have never been overly caught up with tradition. And even though Ms. Black is in a white tulle dress and Ms. Bonner is in a sharp suit, their choice of wedding march is not the usual, the Verve's Bittersweet Symphony. They've waited 10 years to marry, and this ceremony is really a party to mark their time together.
We're joking about our 10-year anniversary, and we're like, maybe we'll just get married for our 10-year anniversary. That as a joke.
You know? Yeah. I think it's basically us trying to avoid buying each other gifts. Let's just get married, not have to worry about getting a gift.
But first, Brittany Black says they had to work to find a venue.
One venue actually put us in a season. So it was like summer weddings, winter weddings, autumn weddings, spring weddings, same-sex weddings, under seasons. So that one was a bit...
The couple have spent months preparing everything, down to the smallest details. 3 nights before the wedding, they're still glazing the placeholders for people's names for the reception, little brains cast in plaster in honour of Ms. Black's neuroscience PhD. She's painting blackboards for their photo booth as Ms. Bonner ices their three-tiered wedding mud cake.
I convinced her she wanted carrot cake, but...
I wanted a whole bunch of different kinds of cake, but she's confident with her chocolate mud cake.
Half will be traditional and white, the other half will be speckled with coloured icing and topped with two dinosaurs, a representation of two different people coming together. Brittany Black says it's a celebration their Australian friends envy.
New Zealand and Australia have been known to be, you know, the more laid back, the more progressive, the more accepting, you know, kind of communities. And then for Australia to still be just even thinking about it rather than actually actioning it, it is kind of sad.
When Tony Abbott was leading the argument against gay marriage in earlier times in Australia, current New Zealand Prime Minister Bill English was doing the same here. Like opponents in Australia, he expressed worries about the implications for religious freedom and freedom of speech. But last December, he openly acknowledged his worries had been misplaced. Mr. English said he would probably vote differently on same-sex marriage now and did not consider it a threat to marriage between a man and a woman.
In Brittany and Sierra's words, marriage is sharing their life with the one they love.
Celebrant Rochelle Fleming officiates at about 2 same-sex marriages a month.
And intensity or the realness of that commitment and wanting everyone, like a public affirmation really, of their love is what their wedding becomes about.
She says more than half the weddings she does are for foreign couples.
Plus their entourage of people coming to New Zealand. So if you were to look at that as a proportion of marriages here in New Zealand, then it's quite substantial. So it does contribute to a lot of tourism in New Zealand.
At Grace Hill Vineyard, just outside Auckland, owner Robin Ruart has been trying to tap into that market. Brittany Black and Sarah Bonner's wedding is the 9th same-sex wedding to be held at his venue just since January, and he says the frequency is increasing. But he also says he recognises that sooner or later, the Australian trade will be not quite so lucrative.
Are you concerned at all that Australia might legalise same-sex marriage over there and then you lose that kind of destination wedding aspect here?
I've never been one to worry about things I can't change. If it happens, it happens. Even though for me, myself, I'd lose the market. I think it'll be good for Australians, same-sex people, for them. They can get married there with their friends in their country.
In downtown Auckland, those couples can also get married in church. The Reverend Clay Nelson moved to the city's Unitarian Church because it would allow him to conduct same-sex weddings. He says beliefs will change with each generation.
With the people who are 30 or younger are in charge, none of these attitudes will they carry with them. And so it'll be gone. This is kind of the last gasp of those who are, what do they say, male, pale and stale.
For Ms. Black and Ms. Bonner, it is time, they say, to look to the future.
That we could probably do this forever?
Probably. Yeah.
We'll see.
And that report from Nastasia Tay in New Zealand. Time now to check the news headlines for you. And there are reports of several rockets landing in and around Kabul airport. No reports of casualties or damage at this stage. The US Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis and the NATO chief Jens Stoltenberg currently in Kabul to meet with Afghanistan's President Ashraf Ghani. Thailand's Supreme Court has found that the former Prime Minister Yingluck Shinawatra guilty of negligence and sentenced her to 5 years in prison in absentia. The whereabouts of Ms. Shinawatra, whose government was ousted in 2014, are unknown. The Australian Bureau of Statistics annual causes of death report has revealed that while heart disease remains Australia's biggest killer, dementia is now the leading cause of death among Australian women. It's also shown drug deaths are at a 20-year high, with most of the deaths attributed to prescription drugs. And more than 80,000 people have now fled areas around Indonesia's Mount Agung volcano on the tourist island of Bali as fears grow over an imminent eruption. Well, that's SBS World News Radio for now. You can see Sarah Arbo bringing you SBS World News right across Australia. Don't forget our website, sbs.com.au/news. I'm Greg Diet. Thanks for listening.